Serious Rap Shit is a production of iHeartRadio.
Me and my friend take this rap shit seriously.
Yo, mic check. 1, 2. Episode, is this 146?
146.
A bunch of crazy shit has been happening. And I forgot what episode we were on. Episode 146, Serious Rap Shit Podcast. I'm John, your host.
I'm Josh, other host.
And yeah, we about to get busy. How's it going, Josh?
I'm chilling, bro. Been on the phone all morning with like doctors and shit. I have to surgery on my nose. So I had to like call, make a fucking appointment for a CAT scan. But like, you know how insurances are. I'm like, all right, well, I gotta call my doctor and get a fucking referral. And then I gotta, you know, like, dog, it's so fucking complicated. It's so insane, man.
They really make you jump through hoops for a thing that you need, healthcare.
Yeah, you know? It's insane. Like, the system is so backwards where it's like, well, you need a referral from this doctor to go see that doctor, and then a referral from them to go get this other procedure. That's like, y'all can't just like call them? Like, why is this situation so complicated?
Yeah,
that it's so insane. I mean, it was hard enough just to find like doctors that took my my insurance.
Right. In network and all of that.
Yeah, exactly. In network and shit. Like, it's insane just to try and find a doctor that just takes my insurance. Like, everything is just like, it's so fucking complicated, man. There's nothing like, no direct procedural shit. Everything is like super complicated.
Yeah, I'll definitely say after being really sick in 2018, I do not miss being just like that daily entanglement within like the healthcare system and having to navigate it every day. I don't miss that at all, man. That shit is like it'll like stress you out.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It'll really stress you out. So it's sad to think that, you know, like I said, like it's the thing that you need the most, you know, next to obviously like food and clothing and shelter, you know, you need your health and well-being, and that's the system that's the most complicated, the most overpriced, you know, the most like convoluted and needlessly complex. It's like, do y'all want me to get healthy? You know what I'm saying? Like, not even to be on some, you know, like conspiracy shit, but it's like who does this serve?
Yeah, it's crazy. And I recently found out like Philadelphia is like the only like major city that doesn't have a like city or state run hospital.
Oh wow. Yeah.
Like, you know, they've all been essentially privatized. It's like one company, two companies, excuse me, in this area run every hospital.
It's crazy.
It's like Jefferson and Einstein are the only two hospitals essentially in this area. They're all like some kind of derivative of those.
Did you see Hahnemann just got sold?
Yes.
The Hahnemann building?
Yeah.
So are y'all going to make like condos out of that giant hospital in the heart of the city?
It was billed as like a once in a lifetime opportunity. It's like, you realize we're in the middle of a pandemic and you just sold off a hospital, right?
Right. A pandemic that we haven't been prepared for or properly executing like care for from the highest levels, you know what I mean? Like at like the federal level, excuse me, they've mismanaged this thing, and we have local hospitals being sold off to build condos. I don't know. Maybe New York's getting like that much more expensive, and niggas just like coming from down there to, you know, come and live in the old Hahnemann building.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because you can't live in Manhattan anymore. Like, it's crazy.
Well, I was listening to the Majority Report, and they were saying, I think it was either 30 or 40% of New Yorkers will be evicted.
Insane.
Yeah, like that's
insane.
In like the one of the largest cities in the world, yeah, like 30 to 40% of their residents will be evicted because of everything that's going on.
That's interesting that you said that, because I read I was looking at an infographic a couple of days ago that was like state by state the percentage of people who were facing evictions, and Pennsylvania was 40%.
Oh yeah, dog, I would not be surprised at all. Like, people haven't paid their rent here probably in 2 to 3 months.
Yeah. It's bugged out because, you know, like, I work from home. My partner works remotely. Well, she has been since the pandemic hit. So none of our stuff has slowed up. You know what I mean? She works in, like, the nonprofit sectors, like journalism, nonprofit journalism. I work in the arts and entertainment journalism sector. So we just been, outside of, you know, me missing, like, DJ gigs, we've been rolling.
Yeah.
And our landlord asked me, I saw him the other day, and he was like, yeah, are y'all cool? Our landlord's, like, a sweet guy, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So he's like, yeah, are y'all all right, money-wise? You know what I mean? And I was like, yeah, you know, we've been cool. And he kind of like gave me like the shit, you one of the few. You know what I'm saying? Because I could imagine you ain't worked since March. What are people legitimately expected to do?
Yeah. And I mean, like, you know, the Senate or whatever went on like, you know, they took an early day on Friday without voting on an extension to unemployment.
Terrible. Fucking shameless.
And, like, you know, so those benefits ran out for people. And, like, you know, there's no second stimulus. You know, that $1,200 that was supposed to last, I guess, for 6 months or whatever. You know, they're talking about going back into complete lockdown.
Yeah.
I mean, it's cool, though, because Trump said he's going to ban TikTok. So at least our priorities are where they need to be.
As long as we can lock down on kids across America doing, like, silly little dances on a social media platform. There's so much outside of the, how do I want to say, like, the general lack of empathy that comes from political leadership in this country, the, like, emotional intelligence is low. The general intelligence is low. You know what I mean? Like, this cat, Trump, is worried about, like, all the wrong things, and hundreds of thousands of people have died from this shit.
Over 150,000 people are dead.
That's crazy to me. And, like, how, like, is that shit acceptable?
And, like, he's out there lying about, like, yeah, you know, I'm throwing out the first pitch at the Yankees game. the Yankees fuck? Were like, no, he's not. Like, we need to ask him to throw the first pitch out.
Look, I'm not a person who is like, yeah, you know, if you voted for Trump, like, this is what you got. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you deserve it or whatever. But white people in this country have to think about how deeply and, like, desperately they're holding on to racism, and how this shit is, like, led us into all of the different things that it's led us into. This motherfucker Trump had zero, you know, expertise on any political level. He doesn't have even, like, a diplomatic disposition. He's not a smart individual. You know what I'm saying? And because this motherfucker said, you know, I'm going to build a wall, and this, that, and the third, he played into, like, this racist impulse that white people in this country have. Y'all voted for him.
Yeah.
And now you got a motherfucker that, you know, will willfully ignore what doctors are saying and what scientists are saying in service of his own ego, if even that. And now, like you said earlier, 150,000 people in this country are dead. Who knows how many people from here have spread this shit elsewhere and killed other people. And people's children and parents and grandparents are going in the grave because these motherfuckers at the very top have mismanaged this shit. And the regime is there because y'all love being white and racist so much.
Yeah. He doesn't even do, like, I mean, he does dog whistles, but, like, he's so blatant with other shit. It's like, why bother to even do the dog whistle?
Right, right. Just outright. You know what I mean? He's calling this shit the China flu and shit.
Yeah.
Sometimes he's, like, real direct with it.
I mean, he just, like, tweeted last week, like, yeah, I just rescinded an Obama-era regulation, and no longer will your suburban dreams be ruined by low-income housing and blah, blah, blah. It's like, that's barely coded racist redlining language.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, yeah. It's insane. I know somebody, I didn't realize this till like 2-3 weeks ago. He had commented about it. I didn't know, like, he voted for Trump. Dude, I went to like middle school with.
Oh, shit.
He always had like money. Like, he was never a dude that was like, you know, struggling or not. Like, his people's had bread.
Mm-hmm.
And he's not Argentinian. I think he's Colombian. He's Colombian. But he went, like, he joined the military after school, I guess. Like, you know, we weren't really friends after, like, middle school.
Right.
And he, like, apparently went, like, joined the military. And then, like, he was doing, like, military contract work. Like, last I saw him, like, talk about online or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But then, like, I don't know, maybe a couple weeks ago, he posted, like, yeah, you know, I voted for this dude, but, like, this is ridiculous. And he was talking about, like, how he's handling, like, the coronavirus shit. And I'm just like,
yo,
like, you, like, all the, like, dog, all the blatant racism against, like, Latinx people, you're, like, Colombian, and you were just like, yeah, that's cool, because, like, he's going to make the military stronger?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, what people are willing to, like, just, like, go away. And here's the thing. This is how, like, they talk about that shit before because they're just like, you know, like, well, you know, this is how things, like, fall into, like, fascist regimes because people are willing to overlook certain shit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
To just continue to allow it. But, like, the problem is, like, this shit is so ingrained in America that, like, people look at Trump and go like, well, he's the problem. If we get him out of office, it'll change. And not go like, no, America's ingrained in like fascist ideals.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you see people on social media make memes about it and discuss it. You know, how much did the Nazi regime learn from American eugenicists?
Yeah.
An American white supremacist. You know what I mean? That's not no shit they just cooked up on their own in Germany and Austria and just decided like, oh yeah, this is how we're gonna target a specific ethnic group. This is how we're gonna exterminate them and throw them in camps and shit. You know, the United States had been running that playbook for a while. And other people learn from that. You know what I mean? Yeah, well,
I just learned about this one thing last month. But I've known about the internment camps, the internment camps the Nazis put the Jews in was, and other people, you know.
Right.
The internment camps that the Nazis used were based off of Indian reservations.
Mm-hmm.
And what I found out recently was there was this thing in Texas, I believe it was. Now, I'm going to be fuzzy with this because I literally just learned it like last month and it's not like I watched a video on it. So it's not like I read like a deep book on it. But they had basically it was like the beginnings of like the propaganda about illegal immigrants. Right. And because there used to be, like, you used to be able to, like, just come over the border and work and then go back across the border. Like, no, it was no big deal.
Right.
And they started, like, the propaganda of, like, oh, well, they bring disease, blah, 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 blah.
Wow.
And so they brought, so they started putting them through, like, gasoline baths.
Ooh, what?
To, like, kill any bugs or whatever that they were bringing with them. It yeah. turned out, like, of course, you know, it was Americans who were spreading the disease, mm-hmm. but, like, you know, whatever. But it that's they those baths that they were putting, like, immigrant workers through, of course, you know, had super long-term health damages and shit.
Yeah, absolutely.
But they would those, like, gas, essentially what they were doing was, like, gassing them with, like, gasoline and this other, like, chemicals, like, essentially, like, pesticides almost.
Oh, wow.
Those things were what the Nazis used to then use for their gas chambers.
Right, right.
So, like, yeah, America, like, gave the blueprint. Like, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. This country likes to pretend it's not, but, I mean, it's... You know, it's only getting further and further leaning toward fascism.
Yeah. And lynching was, you know, an American pastime.
Yeah. In this country. Over 2,000 people.
You know what I'm saying? For a long time, that was just, like, socially acceptable.
Yeah.
You know, in our grandparents' time. In yeah. our parents' time. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Well, I Last Week Tonight just did a really great piece on history and how much history is just, like, left out of history books and what they, like, change, how certain wording changes, and how they can, like, how they, like, downplay the effects of slavery with simple word changes. Like saying, you know, people brought slaves to Texas to do chores.
Right.
Like that kind of, and that shit ends up in fucking history books. You also have, like, there's, like, they do a really great job to not connect, like, through history. So, like, what's happening in, you know, the end of slavery that then connects to, like, Jim Crow. Because, like, there was, like, several black senators right after, like, not long after the end of slavery that, you know, when black folks were, like, starting to, like, actually get themselves a peace, mm-hmm. that's when the rise of the Klan started.
Yeah, absolutely. And it wasn't a coincidence.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. So, like, that's when, you know, then there's, you know, then Jim Crow, and then there's civil rights, and, like, redlining, and all these things connect to why, like, the wage gap is the way it is, and mm-hmm. why wealth gap is what it is, and, like, all these things affect going forward.
Yeah, it's definitely... a set of social, political, and economic dynamics that have built upon each other, right?
Yeah.
So we tend to look at history in, like, a fragmented way, like, oh, we're living in modern times now, and, you know, back in the days was civil rights, and then even further back was, you know, slavery, Reconstruction, and all of that. We tend to, like, fragment history, but, you know, there was never a pause day on any of this. We never stopped, you know, this train from rolling. What I'm saying is, history exists in a continuum.
Yes.
And the United States didn't become the wealthiest country in the world because of this myth of, you know, American exceptionalism and, like, we were just great and we did it. If you have hundreds of years of free labor and stolen land, to exploit. That's the main two things that you need, at least in an agrarian economy. You need labor and you need land. You know what I'm saying? You had the two fundamentals that you stole. There's a reason why you started the game, you know, ahead of the curve. You know what I mean?
You started life on third base and thought you hit a triple. Like, you know what I mean?
Yep, 100%. Before we even like dig further into this, let's jump out and take a quick break.
Yep.
Boom! Right back at it. So before we go any further, I want to give a rest in peace shout out to our brother Malik B, brilliant MC, one of the original members of the Roots when they went on that like classic run of albums. He's on Organics, Do You Want More, Illadelph Half-Life, and Things Fall Apart. He passed away last week. And it's crazy because, you know, you never really know nowadays. Like, you hear somebody died and it could be social media does hoaxes and stuff for prominent people all the time. But my man Carl Madison, shout out to Carl, he is really close with Malik. And they had worked together on a bunch of music. And when he posted it, I was like, okay, that's real. I know Carl knows their family and shit. So, you know, at that point, I was like, oh, shit, this is like a real thing. And it was rough to see and to think about.
Yeah.
Because, like, I've known Malik most of my life. You know, if you go to my mom's house and you go out on her like little back porch and you look across the way over to 15th Street, you can see Malik's mom's house. You know what I'm saying? So like we, you know, lived very close, one block over, and yeah, it was just crazy. I hit up my brother, shout out to my brother. I hit him up when I first heard. And then somebody from around the way had confirmed it, like, yeah, he did pass away. So, yeah, just rest in peace to him. Much love to his family and all the people who listen to his music. People have been sharing his songs and his verses since he passed. And really, like, shout out to everybody that's been showing him love.
Yeah, for real. You know, I only met him a couple times, but he was always a good person, like good soul when I met him. And, you know, it's a shame, you know, from everything I can tell, I know, you know, like, I've known you most of my life and you've known him. So, you know, you've only spoken good of him. And, you know, the world is, you know, the world is a worse off place not having him here.
Yeah.
And he's still so young, man, only 47. And
yeah.
You know, that shit nowadays, that should be like midlife. You know what I mean?
Yeah. 47 is no age to pass away. I don't know what happened or, you know, what the circumstances were. I'm not even sure I want to know, you know what I mean, or even need to know. But, yeah, 47 is no age to pass away. We seeing cats as hip hop gets older. We're seeing people, you know, into their 40s. With like bright shining careers and making some of the best music that they've made or some of the best art that they've ever produced well into their 40s. It's sad that Malik didn't get that full shot. You know what I mean? That full shot to really get busy, you know, like he could. He was a gifted MC. He's probably, in all of my years, I've rhymed with a lot of people. I've, like, freestyled and, like, ciphered with countless MCs, you know what I mean, from all around the world. And he's probably the best off-the-top MC I've ever rhymed with, you know what I mean, or like really share like a physical space with. He was really as like one of those guys, like Juice, you know, Supernatural, those guys who can just like come off the top, you know, and just paint stories. He could like rhyme in stories and just like really dig into that shit. He was really one of the best that I had ever seen. And, you know, I don't think there's any silver lining or consolation in death. But if there is, it feels good to see people recognize him.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
yeah, definitely.
Folks from around the world, like, you know, people in Philly hip hop is kind of, we're like a family, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. we like, everybody knows everybody.
A dysfunctional family, but a family.
100%, you know what I mean? If you rhyme or you DJ or whatever, all the B-boys know all the DJs and the B-girls. And, you know, it's like a close-knit thing. So everybody here knew he was nice. But this is really the response to this around the world is really showing me that the world knew that he was nice. I'm seeing people from all over sharing his verses and songs and shit. And it warms my heart as somebody, this is a guy from my neighborhood, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it warms my heart to see that people around the world recognize his gift.
Yeah, absolutely. Like you say, I mean, like the community here is small, and you're essentially like 1 degree removed away from anybody in the business.
Yeah.
And you know, to see like just the outpouring here, but not just the outpouring here, but the outpouring like worldwide, is real, and you know, it's just a shame. Like you said, man, like there's so many people who are making great music into their 40s to have somebody go at 47 when, you know, the future is still so bright.
Yeah.
You know, it's a shame. And Malik was a good dude. And, you know, you know, just a shitty loss, man.
Yeah. When we were talking about this yesterday, you reminded me that we saw Malik front the Roots.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
In like the mid-90s, we went to a show and Tariq had got into some shit and couldn't make it. And Malik was like the front man for the Roots. And it was crazy because it was me, you, and Just, right?
Yep.
Me, you, and Just went to see, shout out to Just. We went to see this show and we had ran into Malik before they got on stage. I think it was before they got on stage. And he was like, yo, stay here. I'm going to come back. I'm going to get y'all backstage. And we waited by the gate and shit. And he never came back. Yep. You know what I mean? Which
he did. He did invite us to the after party, though.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
And we were like, you know, 15, 16 year olds in a definitely adult after party.
Grown people after party.
Yes.
You know what I mean? So it's, you know, and Malik, he didn't have to, you know, see me and come show love because he knew me from around the way. But he was always like that. You know what I mean? I remember I saw him at the Roots picnic. You know what I mean? And I was, you know, doing a little all access, little VIP shit. You know what I mean? Backstage. And he seen me. You said what?
I said, big timer.
Listen, you know what I mean? That's the only way I'm going to these festivals, you know what I mean? But he saw me back there, you know, show love, you know? He was just that kind of person, you know what I mean? Like, he would roll up on you and holler at you. I remember the last time I saw him, I had one of the big, like, the wood Africa medallions, like, niggas used to wear in the 90s. And he's like, man, where you get one of them motherfuckers from? You know what I mean? Like, he just was, like, a open, dope person.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, yeah, you know, rest in peace to him. It's beautiful to see people sharing his music. And shout out to his family, you know what I mean? I know he was real close with his people, real faithful man, you know what I mean? Shout out to him. The world is definitely, you know, less good without him being here.
Yeah, man, you know, inshallah, you know, I pray, you know, Allah grants him access, man. Mm-hmm. And yeah, yeah, it's sad, like, you know, sad, fucking sad time for hip hop, man. It when we lose such a great, you know what I mean? Like, man, you know, a lot of people say Thought is the best out, and you know, there's no, you're not gonna get a big argument here, right?
Right.
But you know, even Thought will say like Steel Sharpened Steel, and Malik made him a better MC.
Oh yeah, 100%. You know what I mean, 100%.
You don't get the Thought you have right now without Malik.
Nope, not at all. And people, I feel like people are recognizing that now.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah,
definitely. Move on to some, you know, a little happier subject.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Both of us checked out a documentary this week called "The Remix: Hip Hop and Fashion." It's on Netflix. It's a really good documentary. Essentially telling the story of Misa Hylton, but along with her, we get to touch on Dapper Dan and April Walker, Piers Moss, mm-hmm. A couple, like, we get to touch on a bunch of stuff, but I mean, it's primarily Misa Hylton's story. And how, I knew she was Puffy's girlfriend. I mean, I knew that she was a stylist, but I didn't know how much of an effect she had on the culture, for real, for real.
Yeah, it's cool because, you know, stuff like this film and other, you know, pieces that writers have put out there, pieces of like history, unknown history or underappreciated history that we're seeing, you know, make its way out into the public consciousness. Films like this, it's really exciting because this is like stuff we would have loved this when we were kids. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
To get to learn these folks' stories. And then I appreciate it too from the standpoint of women being able to see, like, oh, our creative genius has been a part of this culture from the beginning.
Yes.
And that we've made significant contributions, because it's real easy to, you know, kind of dismiss women's input in hip hop. They say it's like a man's game or whatever, without women like, you know, April Walker, Misa Hylton, who put that eye and that spirit and that creative intelligence into, you know, the culture as a whole. This shit would have looked completely different. It would have felt completely different. You know, the stuff that they did in the fashion world with hip hop reverberates now into stuff that people are wearing walking around now. You know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely. And you get to see, like, I mean, Misa herself, like, dog, she changed R&B.
Yeah. You remember how R&B singer when we was little kids?
Yeah.
Peebo Bryson and all them, they used to have like the big suits on and some hard bottoms, you know what I mean? All the women, Anita Baker had like the cocktail dresses on and shit.
Yeah.
Like it was a whole completely different wave. Yeah.
Everything was evening wear.
100%. Like it was a whole different style. Mary came through with some Tim's on or the baseball jersey and shit. It was
Jodeci with the leather in the desert, like, you know what I mean? Like, there's Misa Hylton is the one who like shaped their images, like, you know what I mean? They, as like kids and even up until, you know, before this documentary, the idea was, well, Puffy's the one who like changed their images, but like Misa's the one who had this vision, like, you know what I mean?
How about
even
that?
And what's crazy is you get to see, like, okay, well, she did that with Jodeci and Mary, but, you know, she was integral in shaping Little Kim's image.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even the titty out outfit. Like, that was Misa's.
The pasties joint.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, like, so, and what I love about that, too, is, like, that's empowering in a sense that, like, yo, like, she recognized, like, Little Kim was sex appeal. And, like, so we're going to, like, we're going to do that for real.
Yeah. We're going to own it and lean into it.
Yeah.
And it'll be, like, shocking. It'll be creative. Yeah.
Yeah. And, I mean, we get a good history of it with, you know, starting with Dapper Dan and, like, just his legacy and how impactful he is. I mean, like, almost any picture you see from, like, mid to late 80s hip-hop, those dudes is wearing something Dapper Dan.
Yeah. Yeah. That whole style that he pioneered, that shit is ingrained in my memory as, like, part of the 80s.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
That mean those Gucci and MCM jackets and shit like that. Like, that's all, like, that's how I see 80s hip-hop. Like, you know what I mean? He is that integral to, like, hip-hop culture. Like, that integral. Yeah. You know what I mean?
It's just as important as the jewelry.
Yes.
And, 100%. You know, all of the like, people had, like, the sheepskin coats and all of that stuff. Like, that Dapper Dan style where he was taking, you know, these prints from, like, European fashion houses and remixing that shit into, like, you know, hood street fashion. That was, like, a genius idea in and of itself.
Yeah, to the point they stole his designs later.
Which is insane to me that somebody could have been so marginalized. They're doing raids on this guy's spot.
Yeah.
You know, really trying to, like, push him out of business. And then, I mean, you see this not to be, you know, conspiracy guy, but, like, you see a similar thing in the drug game, the weed game. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You got damn near Martha Stewart selling edibles and shit. You know what I mean? And it's still black people sitting in jail. But that's kind of the story of how American culture has evolved. Black people have pioneered shit. Immigrants have pioneered shit. And, you know, it was like, oh, we don't like this. We don't like your food. We don't like jazz. We don't like the way you dance. We don't like, you know, the way you wear big door knocker earrings. We don't like none of this stuff that you do naturally until we like it and love it and want to make money off of it.
Absolutely. Yeah, like, people don't love black people, but they love the culture that they make.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, I mean, like, this documentary does a great job of showing that even, like, back into, like, you know, early 20s. You know what I mean? And the styles that, like, black folks were wearing then and, like, making do sometimes. Like, yo, we're going to take what we can and make it look good.
Yeah.
I think it does a great job with telling that story. Also down to the fact that, like, Misa, you know, because, you know, obviously the bubble burst at a certain point with the music industry, period, because of, like, you know, once streaming became a part, there wasn't $1 million videos anymore. So there wasn't this giant budget to hire stylists all the time.
Right, right.
I also think it's funny. You see how important the stylists are because there were so many hip-hop artists that, like, came out with their own clothing brand. And you'd look at shit and be like, this is atrocious.
Right.
And you're like, but, you know, these dudes don't dress terribly, right? Like,
yeah.
And part of it's because they have a stylist who tells them exactly what to wear.
That's interesting that you said that because, you know, almost as a rule, a lot of the, like, rapper clothing lines of the – I'm thinking of the – early 2000s in particular, were almost universally worse than the clothing that they were wearing in the videos.
Absolutely.
Before they had clothing lines. I mean, after you get the clothing line, then of course Nelly's wearing Vocal in like every yes. video. You know what I mean? Or like the Outkast. I don't think them niggas ever wore that shit.
No, absolutely not.
You know what I mean? Like once you like get the deal to have your own line, then you just wear that shit. But the videos yeah. before that, you know, people were well dressed. And like you said, I think that it speaks to the fact that you had people who lived and died by fashion styling these cats.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And they had a vision to like, yo, what these people should look like, blah, 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 blah. Like what we're trying to say with this.
Yeah.
I mean, listen, man, fashion is a real thing. And like, you know what I mean?
Right. I don't know nothing about that shit.
Yeah.
I know what I like.
You're saying something when you're wearing clothes and like you're putting off a certain image, right? Like, you know, everybody ain't good at that, man. Like, you know,
yeah,
a lot of dudes shouldn't probably be rocking their fucking you know, Bushy or whatever. Like, you know what I mean?
We need a Bushy documentary.
Yeah, exactly.
I want to know what was in Buster's mind when they was designing that shit, and he was like, oh, niggas on the street gonna be wearing this. The big blue Jamiroquai hats this yeah. nigga had. Yeah. I want a Bushy documentary.
Exactly. The Fugees had their own clothes. Like, so many people had their own.
Was it like a Refugees?
Yeah, I think it was something like that, yeah.
So, yeah. I would say definitely, you know, if you got Netflix, which if you don't, I don't know what to tell you.
Get whoever's password that you know who does have it, because somebody has it.
Gets my password, and definitely check out this joint, the remix, Hip Hop and Fashion. It's super dope for anybody who's into music, into culture, into history, you know what I mean? And really understanding why we dress the way we dress now, or why, you know, certain trends became a trend, or certain things happen. It's like super dope, super well done. And it sheds light on people who are really creative geniuses that, you know, are undervalued.
Absolutely. It's a really good documentary to check out. I mean, because it goes all the way up to the fucking Carter's album and,
mm-hmm.
you know, shit like that. So, it carries, you know, it carries a good 25, 30 years of hip-hop style. And, you know, that's really important. It's really important to document. And it's a really good documentary. Definitely worth checking out.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's hop into our final break and then come back and talk some new music.
Yep.
Boom, back in effect. So I did not listen to really much new music this week. It's been a challenging time for me.
Yes.
I haven't really had the time to like sit down and absorb anything, but did you check out anything new this week?
Yes. I checked out two new relatively new. The Black Sopranos family.
Mm-hmm.
It's Benny and like his crew, like an offshoot of Griselda essentially.
Yeah.
I mean, it's flames. Like it's a really dope project. It's essentially like a Gangsta Grills mixtape.
Yeah.
Cause it's drama, hosts it. But you know, if it's Benny, you know, there's lyrics involved. And he's top of his game, and his crew is really dope too. Mm. It kind of reminds me of like Mobb Deep Records, where like, you know, you get like a Big Noid or like one of the other homies pop up on a joint,
bring the whole crew along.
Yeah, exactly. Beats are really dope. I listened to it on Tidal, and Tidal didn't have production credits for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
Normally they do, but they didn't have any production credits.
Yeah.
So I don't know who did the beats on it, but the beats are really dope. It's a super stellar project and definitely worth checking out. Also, I checked out Heady One's project, Gang, that came out back in April.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, folks know, like, Drake dropped a little freestyle, whatever, 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, something like that.
Yeah.
And Heady One is the artist that is on there. He's a grime artist that's on there after Drake. Unless you're like my daughter who just turned it off as soon as Drake was done rhyming. but yeah, Heady One is the grime artist who's on there, and his project Gang is really, really good. Obviously, that feat, that, you know, being on that song made me check it out. But this, it's really dope. Like, it's not just like super like rhymey grime shit. It's like he had the first track on there. It's like a almost like a let's hold on, we're going home type track. So
sing song shit.
Yeah, like a sing song joint. And there's like another one on the project that's like that too. So like it's a really good, really stellar project. I really enjoyed it. You know, I'm the grime dude though, so like I don't know. You know, I don't know if everybody would feel that, but I think it's definitely a dope project. If you've checked out any of the other like grime shit that we've recommended, I would say check this out.
Yeah,
it's a really stellar project.
Yeah, I'm a fuck with it, and I'm a fuck with the Benny. BSF. Yeah, the Benny BSF joint. Benny, it's ill to see, because you know he came out, you know, alongside Griselda and, you know, West Side Gun and Conway. And it's ill to see. He does not miss on a project.
Nah. You know what I mean? He's never dropped something whack.
That motherfucker can rhyme with anybody. He can make a song with anybody. I thought him and, I think the OBH ran into, like, legal problems and shit. But I thought him and Dark Low was going to do a whole tape together.
I think they were supposed to. I think they were supposed to.
With like V Don or like Alchemist on the Beast, that shit would have been great. We, man, me and you would have had to start going back to doing crime. you know what I'm saying?
Well, I think you got a ski mask. Like, you probably would have got a ski mask when you bought it.
Right. You know what I mean? It comes along with like the vinyl pack. Yo, man.
Some gloves and a ski mask come along with it.
Yeah, like that one shit they had, I can't think of the name of it, but Benny got like the Sixers jersey on.
Yeah,
and they in Philly, and they going back and forth. That shit is hard as nails.
Yeah, definitely,
man. Definitely, I need them to let OBH out so Dark Low can do a joint with Benny, man. I mean, let him out because fuck the justice system in general.
Exactly,
you know what I mean. But
freedom, man.
Yeah, man. That shit. I was really like, oh man. All right, they gonna get together and do a joint.
Yeah,
it's crazy.
Yeah. Also, real quick, both of us checked out Beyonce's project, that Black is King, the visual album.
How about that?
Yeah, that is, it's stunning. It's stunning to look at. The mixture of, like, African cultures and just, like, what they play with, like, visually.
Yeah.
It's a celebration of blackness, and it's like, it's definitely, check it out on Disney Plus.
It's crazy too, because I'm over here like, I ain't listening to any new music this week, but the Beyonce record is so, obviously it's a film and an album, a visual album, as they say. I really thought, like, you know, I was thinking about it in the sense of like, oh yeah, I watched the movie. you know what I mean? Over the week, but I didn't think of it in the context of an album as we usually do. But yeah, yo, a lot of it has, you know, like that South African, like house music feel to it. Mm-hmm. It's like up tempo, is ill, yo. Just to see Beyonce really take, you know, like you said, African culture, she's dealing with like creation stories, you know what I mean, hero stories, you know what I mean, like the Joseph Campbell type shit, you know what I mean, hero with a thousand faces type shit.
Yes.
She's really like playing with all of these like mythological elements. The visual of it is beautiful. The set design is gorgeous. Fucking Tierra Whack is in it. You know what I mean? Yeah. North Philly.
Philly connections. Yeah.
My fucking nephew is in it. Ramir Cologne. Shout out to him. You know, Alani. You know what I mean? Like, it's you see, I love seeing Philly people show up, related to him or not. You know what I mean? I like seeing Philly people show up and shit like this. And it's just beautiful. And it really, I got feelings of like a reverse colonial fantasy, you know what I mean? Where you saw like Hove in the back of the car with his feet up, you know what I mean? And they have like white servants all around their house, which, you know, I feel like if black people ruled the world, we wouldn't get white people to work for us, but you know, whatever. You know what I mean? It just it was ill to see just how detailed and how ambitious a creative mind Beyonce is. And I honestly believe if she weren't a black woman who started off in a girl group who makes pop music, I think that a lot more people would be willing to accept the fact that she's really like a creative genius.
Yeah, definitely. I love the visual album aesthetic that's like gaining popularity now.
Yeah, that whole format, obviously,
And obviously she's like been in a large front of that, because with Lemonade and then this, because I just think it's an extension of like an artist's creativity. And everybody who worked with her on this project did just a fantastic job, man. It's stunning to look at. I like the way they play with different things, and like you go from stark contrast of like bright beaches and deserts to then like that scene where they're all in the dark with like this neon lighting and and they play with like a lot of blacks and whites and like contrasting colors to then like brighten it up and show different things. I think it's wonderful, man. I really enjoy watching artists play with different things. And she's definitely, man, she's a creative genius, man. Like, I know, you know, listen, I've said before, she's not my favorite artist in the world. That doesn't mean I can't recognize what a great artist she is.
This shit is like dumb ambitious.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it just, you know, we talked about this yesterday, but you know, Lemonade, Homecoming.
Yeah, Homecoming too. I forgot about that. Yeah.
And this new one, Black is King. I'm like, how many more of these hour long, super ambitious, you know, playing with surrealism, playing with poetry, playing with, you know, avant garde filmmaking techniques and cinematography, like, and then mashing them all up into, you know, a unified piece of work. How many more of these big genius things does she have in her?
I don't know, man.
You know what I'm saying? Like, this shit, if I feel like demographically, if anyone else other than this black woman who's known for making pop music, if anybody else were doing this, we'd be really like standing back and marveling at it as an artistic achievement. You know what I mean? You can have critiques of the art itself or critiques of her as an artist, but like the sheer scale and ambition of this shit, I don't know nobody that's doing it like this. You know, maybe MJ when he was making like,
I was about to say that.
He was making like Moonwalker and shit like that. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like maybe that. But, you know, for her to be like, you know, I'm not even giving y'all just albums. I'm going to give y'all a film along with it. That shit is hardcore, yo.
Yeah, definitely. That's what I was going to say. I was, you know, the only other artist we've ever had do stuff like this would be like MJ.
Yeah. Prince, you know, as well did like,
yeah, yeah, you know, yeah,
Under
yeah,
the Cherry Moon and stuff like this. But this is this is not like a scripted movie. You know what I mean? Obviously, it's a script and all of that, but this thing is like poetry in long form.
Yeah.
You know, visual and sonic poetry in long form. It's ill. Like, I love how Tierra Whack showed up. That whole scene, the way it was shot and the way the costumes were designed kind of reminded me of Alejandro Jodorowsky's Holy Mountain. You know what I mean? The Tierra Whack part. It's ill. And you know that she's assembled a team of, like, dope people to help her execute a vision like this.
Absolutely.
And it's I appreciated the shit. I didn't, you know, I'm thinking Lion King and Disney. I knew it was going to be ill, but I wasn't thinking, like, I didn't have, like, the craziest high hopes for it.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it knocked me out, and I enjoyed it.
Yeah, definitely. It's definitely a must-watch visually alone. It's so fucking stunning, man. So stunning.
Yeah, absolutely.
But, yeah, we can wrap. You can check us out on the social medias at Serious Rap Shit on Instagram and Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
Indie_SRS on Instagram and Twitter. Your John_Liberator on Instagram and Twitter.
Yeah.
We have the Abolish ICE shirts available at Incense Trap and Yoga. You know, that's still wild. The stories that are going on with ICE are just insane. So we need to abolish that. And the money that we're raising goes toward families, to undocumented families. So, definitely go support if you can. And it's a black woman owned business. So, you know, extra pluses there.
Yeah.
And other than that, if you're listening to this on the Apple podcast app, you can rate and review us right in app. It only takes a few seconds. Drop that 5 stars. Say this is the best podcast you've ever listened to in your life. And, you know, show love. We appreciate it. Tell a friend to tell a friend. And we'll be back next week with some more heat for you.
Peace.
Peace.
Serious Rap Shit is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, check out the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get podcasts.